I don't typically ponder them aloud. Her face flushed. Far be it from me to stop you. I have a stake in the conclusion. He plunked his elbow on the worktop and propped his chin in his hand, studying her. Her little one-person debate had him riveted, as did her fetching features when she was deep in concentration. As many women as he charmed and seduced in his life, he could honestly say he had never, ever encountered a woman like this one. Her background wasn't the half of it. She rolled a sugar lump back and forth with the tips of two fingers. He wanted to suck those slender fingers into his mouth and run his tongue over them, between them, lapping up the sweetness until she gasped with forbidden pleasure. The fantasy was so vivid, he could taste it. Good God. Chase straightened, cleared his throat, and rapped his knuckles against the worktop in an affable manner. Let me know when you have your answer, then. I'm available Thursday next, if that suits. With her eyes still trained on the sugar, she signaled for a pause. One moment. Naturally, the answer would be in the negative. No woman of her sense, given the opportunity to consider the matter fully, would weigh both sides and arrive at acceptance. That was why he sent his conquests spinning off guard with charm and flattery, why he dazzled them with lush surroundings and sparkling wines, why he kept his liaisons to one night and no more. Because if a woman looked too close and thought too long, she would see the truth. He was a despicable, shameless cad. Alexandra Mountbatten knew it. She'd understood him from the first. Her answer would be no. So why was he holding his breath in anticipation? Perhaps the brandy had muddled his senses. Or perhaps he couldn't help wondering how it would feel for a rational, clear-eyed woman to see him, truly see him, and still find him worth the risk. His heart clawed up his throat and battered his eardrums, and all because a tidy little governess was taking longer than usual to reject him. Absurd. Stupid, really. At last, she put an end to the suspense. I don't want you to kiss me, she said, now that I've thought it through. See, there it was. She was clever enough to see the black rotted mess where his soul ought to be, and she wanted no part of it. She lifted her tiny, delicate hand to his cheek, not to deliver the slap he deserved, but in an exploratory caress. Her gaze drifted over his face like an apple blossom, finally coming to rest on his mouth. I think, she wet her lips, I think I'd rather kiss you. And before Chase could begin to reckon with the shock of those words, she did. Chapter 10. The moment she touched her lips to his, Alexandra knew she'd made a severe miscalculation. Her carefully tallied sugar lumps were merely sweet piles of lies. By insisting on taking the lead, she told herself she could satisfy her curiosity and retain control. Control? Ha! She couldn't control something she scarcely understood. No more than a landlocked, untraveled farmer could board a Yankee clipper and set a course for the moon. Alexandra hadn't the faintest idea how to navigate passion. However, within moments, he began to lead the way. Her kiss became his. A series of light, teasing brushes of his mouth against hers. He tasted her upper lip, then the lower, taking his time as though the kiss were a puzzle, as though he found her compelling, fascinating. And then he nudged her lips apart and swept his tongue between them. Oh, oh dear. Alex was startled by the intrusion, reeling with sensations, but she didn't dare pull away. To the contrary, she dared to move closer. This was her first kiss. Good or bad, awkward or accomplished, she'd remember it for the rest of her life. But more than that, she wanted him to recall it too. He'd forgotten her after their chance meeting in the bookshop. This time she was determined to etch herself on his memory. No matter how many kisses had come before hers or how many would come after, this one, he would remember. No shyness, no hesitation. She meant to give as good as she received or die of mortification trying. As he deepened the kiss, she leaned into the embrace, sliding her hands up his shoulders, until her fingertips met at the nape of his neck. He wore his hair clipped short there, and she teased her fingers through the dense fringe. He moaned softly, and the sound was pleading, resonant with longing, vulnerable. Then, with a growl, he caught her up in his arms and lifted her body against him. Her thin shift might as well have been nothing. Her toes barely scraped the floor. His tongue stroked hers in a bold, suggestive rhythm, and she couldn't catch her breath. Heat built between their bodies, welding them together. His uninjured hand gathered to a possessive fist, gathering and twisting the back of her shift. He wasn't leading any longer, but overwhelming her instead. Perhaps that was his intent, to hide behind intimacy, draw her close as a way of holding her at a distance. Strange. She would have to ponder it further once pondering was a viable option again. At the moment, his kisses were erasing her mind. That was probably just what he desired. Abruptly, he set her back on her feet. As they parted, her impulse was to lower her eyes and back away slowly. However, she forced herself to stand her ground and meet his gaze. She'd given it her best effort. She'd always have that much. If he found nothing memorable about this encounter, at least she would know that she'd held nothing in reserve. There was pride in that. She searched his face for any hints of approval or disdain. His expression, however, revealed nothing but confusion. He blinked down at her. Christ! As reactions went, she couldn't decide how to interpret blasphemy. Maybe he didn't know either. He took her hands from about his neck, placed them back over her eyes, turned her by the shoulders, and guided her out the kitchen door. Go back to bed, Miss Mountbatten. This never happened. This never happened. Not for him, perhaps, but for Alexandra. That kiss had happened. Really, truly happened in every part of her body. In the days to come, the kiss occupied almost all of her mind as well. She now understood why his attentions as a lover were in such great demand. All reason had deserted her when his lips touched hers. Only feeling had remained, heat and scent and strength and taste. He tasted like... she couldn't name it precisely. What was the taste of a deep, masculine growl? Part brandy, part sin, and wholly intoxicating. Just the memory sent a languid drunkenness seeping through her limbs. She gave her thoughts a shake. She had to stop thinking of it and put the encounter behind her. Ever since last autumn, she'd been wondering how kissing him would feel. Now she knew, and her curiosity was satisfied. For him, it amounted to nothing, a boring evening at home. This never happened. She must concentrate on her duties instead. This was a brief period of employment. She had a future to finance. I'm hemming a handkerchief, Daisy. Would you like to join me? Daisy looked at her older sister. Rosamond shrugged in silent, grudging permission, as though to say, if you must. Now then, Alex beckoned the younger girl closer. Why don't you have a go? Daisy obediently took the half-finished work from Alex's hand. Her stitches were hesitant and clumsy, but Alex showered her with praise and encouragement when she reached the corner. Well done, Daisy.
No, it's not. It's all crooked.
But an excellent start. No one should expect perfection on the first attempt. All you need is a bit of practice. After the edges are done, I'll teach you to embroider letters. We'll begin with this one. She traced a letter in marking chalk. Which letter is that?
D.
And can you guess why I'm going to teach that one first? The girl smiled shyly.
Because it's for Daisy.
Exactly so. Alex was pleased. One letter of the alphabet learned, 25 to go. She would celebrate the smallest of victories. And once you learn to embroider, you'll be ready to take on all sorts of projects. Tablecloths, serviettes.
Serviettes?
Rosamond groaned.
Why would we embroider little flowers and monograms on scraps of cloth, meant to catch spittle and dribbled soup? It's repulsive, if you think about it.
Alex had never considered it that way, but now that Rosamond mentioned it, it was a bit disgusting. It's not all embroidered serviettes, she said. There are countless practical applications for needlework,
Every girl should learn to mend a garment. And why don't boys learn to mend theirs?
Some do learn. It was a man who taught me to sew. Rosamond arched an eyebrow in skepticism.
Truly?
Truly. I was raised on a ship. No ladies aboard.
Tell us more, Daisy urged. And not about the sewing. Tell us something exciting. What is there to tell? Rosamond said. She didn't meet with any mermaids.
Alex hesitated. Relating the story to Mr. Reynaud had been imprudent enough. She was supposed to be transforming these two girls into young ladies. Telling her charges about her own wild childhood would scarcely aid her goal. And if she failed, then she wouldn't be paid. That was it, then. No tales of the high seas. Mrs. Greeley came to her rescue. Miss Mountbatten, you have callers. Two young ladies. They're outside on the pavement. I would have asked them to wait on you in the drawing room if not for the... Her nose wrinkled in disgust. The animal. Two young ladies and an animal. That could mean only one thing.
Thank you, Mrs. Greeley.
Alex rose to her feet.
Rosamond, if I go down to visit my friends for a half hour, may I trust that I'll return to find you, your sister, and this room unscathed? Don't worry. I'm still putting the final touches on our escape plan. We're not going anywhere today.
Good, she added under her breath. I think. She hurried downstairs and out the front door to find her friends waiting in the centre of the square. Nicola, Penny, and a nanny goat exploring the green on a collar and lead, like a lapdog out for a constitutional. Alex flung her arms around each of them in greeting. Penny gave the most marvellously tight hugs, and Nicola always smelled like burnt sugar. Alex's heart wrenched. She hadn't realised how deeply she'd been missing her friends.
It's so good to see you both. Why have you come?
Emma's had her baby.
Nick held up an envelope.
The express arrived this morning.
That and Marigold needed a graze.
Penny scratched the nanny goat between her ears. Alex whisked the letter from Nicola's hand, unfolding it to read for herself. It was so brief, scanning the contents took but a second.
Oh, it's a boy, she said. How wonderful.
I assume he'll be called Richmond, as it's the courtesy title. There's no mention of his Christian name.
It's a terrible letter, Nicola said. Ashbury wrote it. Never trust a man to write about babies.
No descriptions whatsoever, Penny sighed. How are we to know what he looks like? Which of his parents does he favour? What about his temperament?
He's probably pink, wrinkly, bald and hungry, like all newborn babes.
I doubt he's had time to declare a political affiliation.
Alex folded the letter and gave it back to Nicola. We'll have to be patient. Emma will write when she's well rested and she'll tell us every detail.
Speaking of details, Nicola said meaningfully, I believe a certain governess owes us a few.
Yes.
Penny released Marigold's leash and took Alex by the arm, dragging her to the nearest bench.
Tell us everything.
They didn't have to ask Alexandra twice. She unburdened herself of a fortnight's thoughts. She told them all about Rosamond and Daisy, the daily doll funerals, the petty theft, and the five accomplishments she had been given 10 weeks, now 8, to help the master.
The poor dears are hurting, Penny said. They need snuggles, not lessons.
I know, but preparing them for school is a task I've been employed to complete. If I don't succeed... Alex propped her elbows on her knees and let her chin fall into her hands.
They've no interest in needlework. They're immune to bribery. And how am I supposed to teach Daisy penmanship when she doesn't even know her letters?
I wish we could be of more help to you with the governessing, Nicola said. But traditional ladylike accomplishments aren't our strong points either.
I know, said Alex. That's why I treasure you.
They were friends precisely because they didn't fit in with the finishing school set. They were different and unashamed of it. The same could be said of Rosamond and Daisy. The world would try to tell them they weren't good enough, and Alex hated participating in that effort. Penny lunged to catch the goat's leash.
What of the bookshop rake? Has he confessed his love for you yet?
No, Alex replied. No.
That disavowal was entirely too vehement to be believed.
I spend my days with the girls in the schoolroom, she insisted. I scarcely cross paths with the man, except for a few minutes every morning, when he holds my hand in his. Oh,
And that one foolish fumbling kiss in the kitchen.
Come now, Penny wheedled. We're your closest friends. If he's romancing you, you must tell.
Nicola groaned. If he's harassing her, you mean?
There is nothing to tell, Alex insisted. Nothing romantic, nothing villainous, nothing at all.
Alex didn't even consider her statement to be an untruth. This never happened, he'd said. And so it hadn't. That kiss in the kitchen was the last time she would let herself be carried away. From now on, practicality reigned. Believe me, she insisted once more for good measure, I'm more likely to find my future in the stars than in the arms of Chase Renaud.
Nicola perked. Oh, I nearly forgot. She untied her bonnet and removed it carefully, withdrawing a packet wrapped in brown paper, which she handed to Alex. I finally got the lavender vanilla shortbread right. Took me 7 attempts, but at last I made a batch that didn't taste like soap.
Alex accepted the packet. You carried them here in your bonnet.
The goat kept trying to snatch them from my hand, and Penny said she's not allowed sweets. When are you sending that animal back to the country anyway?
When she's healed, of course. Marigold has sensitive digestion.
Obviously, Nick said dryly, looking on as Penny coaxed the animal away from a half-eaten shrub. A delicate stomach indeed. Clutching the packet of shortbread in both hands, Alex kissed Nicola on the cheek in farewell.
Thank you.
This was precisely what I needed.
It's only shortbread, Nicola said.
Alex smiled.
Never underestimate the power of biscuits.
Once her friends had gone, Alex hurried upstairs, entered the nursery, and went directly to the slate. 7 attempts. Nicola had needed 7 different attempts to make edible shortbread before she'd found success. Alex needed to follow her example. These 5 subjects chalked on the schoolroom slate weren't the right recipe for an education. They were like Nicola's first 6 batches of lavender vanilla shortbread. Put together, they tasted like soap. She wiped the slate clean.
No more maths and etiquette. We have a new set of lessons. What are you odd about?
Rosamond asked.
You wanted to buck all the rules, Rosamond. See the world, be free. Then you have only 1 option.
She wrote a single word at the top of the slate and underscored it with a thick, decisive line. Piracy.
Piracy?
Rosamond sounded skeptical but intrigued. These are your new lessons. Alexandra wrote 5 topics on the board. Log keeping, plunder, navigation, the pirate's code. She ended the list. And needlework.
Needlework? Daisy made a face. Why would a pirate need serviettes?
They don't, but every sailor, law-abiding or otherwise, must know how to work a needle and thread. On the open sea, no one else is going to mend a sail or darn a sock.
Rosamond's suspicion won out.
Never mind her, Daisy. It's only a trick.
Alex forged ahead, pretending not to hear her. We'll have our own ship right here in the nursery. I'll be captain, of course. Rosamond, your first mate. You'll be responsible for log keeping and the money.
What about me?
Daisy asked. You, Alexandra said, crouching close, will be our quartermaster. That means you'll ration food and water for the crew. And since we're so undermanned, you'll also take on the most important duty of all, ship's surgeon. There are oh so many diseases and maladies that afflict pirates. Scurvy, malaria, tropical fever. Daisy's eyes lit up.
Plague.
Yes, darling, even plague. Poor Millicent had rough seas ahead. Alex stood. What say you, Rosamond? Are you joining our crew? Rosamond peered at the slate.
How do you mean to teach us all those things?
Personal experience. From the time I was younger than either of you, I was climbing the ratlines. I know how to set a course to Barbuda. I know the worth of Spanish real in shillings, and I can barter in Portuguese.
Does our guardian know you're proposing this?
Not at all.
He's not going to like it.
Alex lifted one shoulder in a shrug. Pirates don't ask permission. She'd been hired to teach these girls, and she meant to fulfill that duty. Her financial circumstances wouldn't allow her to do otherwise, but she was going to accomplish it on her own terms. Rosamond and Daisy needed encouragement, not etiquette, confidence, rather than comportment. And whether Chase Renaud wished it or not, Alexandra would make certain they received it. She would not participate in transforming them into well-mannered, empty-headed, docile young ladies who wouldn't cause him any trouble. She'd help them become women who couldn't be ignored. "Well, Rosamond?" After a pause, Rosamond set aside her book.
"Very well."
Alexandra suppressed a triumphant grin. The girl was humouring her, and probably out of sheer boredom, but it was a start. "Then we have a great deal to do. To start, we'll have to rig our ship." She went to the window and yanked the curtain from its rod. Not precisely sturdy canvas, but for their purposes it would make an adequate sail. She looked at Rosamond. "Do you know where we might find a coil of rope?" Chapter 11.
"Lie back on the bed for me." From his seat on the edge of the mattress, Barrow regarded him. "That is not in the terms of my employment."
"Just do it, will you?"
Barrow complied. "Mind, I'm only doing this because it's 5 o'clock and I value being on time for dinner more than I value my pride."
"No, no, not like that. On your side, facing me.
Prop yourself up on one elbow and rest your head on your hand. Are you going to draw me like one of your French girls?
And keep your boots off the mattress. It's new.
Finest quality a shameless rake can buy." Barrow rolled his eyes. "Now," Chase lifted a gilt-framed mirror and positioned it on the wall opposite the bed. "Tell me, can you see yourself?"
"Partly."
"Which parts? The good parts?"
"That's it." Barrow rolled to a sitting position. "I'm done."
"Come along, man. I can't do this by myself."
"Well, I can't run the Belvoir estate by myself. You're the one with power of attorney."
He sighed and gave in.
"A few inches to the left. Now, up.
A bit more. No, no, that's too much."
Chase strained under the weight of the mirror.
"Hurry up, would you?
Tilt it forward a smidgen. There.
Took you long enough."
Chase drew a nub of chalk from his pocket and marked off the corner. Then he set the mirror down with a groan of relief.
"Now," Barrow said, "we need to discuss the land steward at Belvoir Manor. He might be a wizard with crop rotation, but he can't write a report worth sheep dung. You need to pay him a visit yourself and sort matters."
Chase checked his marks with a level, then hammered 2 hooks into the wall.
"We have 100 other matters needing attention. The planting's done for the summer anyhow."
In point of fact, the planting was not yet done when I first raised the subject, in February.
"You've been avoiding the discussion for months."
"I have not been avoiding the discussion."
He hefted the mirror again, hanging it on the hooks. "I've been avoiding my uncle."
"The Duke's too ill. He won't even know you're there."
"He'll know I'm there," Chase said softly. "He always knows I'm there." Eager to change the subject, he turned and propped his hands on his hips, surveying his handiwork. The cave of carnality was finally complete. Now it could start living up to its name.
"Very well," he told Barrow. "I'll make the journey to Belvoir soon."
"Excellent. I will pin a date to that promise, I hope you realise." Barrow rose from the bed, reached for his hat and headed for the door.
"But it will wait for tomorrow. I'm getting late home as it is. Give Eleanor a kiss for me."
"The hell I will," Barrow said, shutting the door behind him.
"Find your own wife."
That wouldn't be happening. But a little matrimony had never stood between him and a kiss.
God, that stupid kiss.
Days ago now, and he remembered the taste of Alexandra as clearly as he recalled his own name. Fresh and sweet. Like cool water straight from a mountain stream.
Enough!
He left the retreat through the kitchen, locking the door after him, and mounted the stairs to his bedchamber, intending to change for the evening. He hadn't even reached the first landing when a piercing cry pulled him to a halt mid-step. It was followed by a blood-chilling scream. Not a girlish scream, but a womanly one, coming from the direction of the nursery. Alexandra. He jogged up the remaining flights of stairs, pausing on the third landing for breath. The silence was ominous.
Dear God, they've killed her.
He took the last flight of stairs at a sprint, rushed down the corridor and flung open the door to the nursery, steeling himself for the sight of her bloodless corpse splayed on the floor. The scene that greeted him, however, was anything but lifeless.
"Ready the cannon!"
They took no notice of his entrance. Chase used the following moments to survey the nursery. At least it had been a nursery. He wasn't certain what it had become since Millicent's funeral early that morning. The girls' beds had been pushed side by side with a gap of merely a few feet between them.
The curtains had been removed from the windows and strung from the bedposts. Standing amid it all, Daisy squinted into a spyglass fashioned from a discarded paper cone, and Rosamond brandished a crescent-shaped object that resembled nothing so much as a cutlass. Millicent sat on the opposite bed, wearing a paper sailor's hat and, as was her usual, an unsettling smile. Rosamond slashed her blade through the air.
Fire!
From behind them, Miss Mountbatten made a series of the most fantastic noises. A boom, then a whistled glissando, followed by a rumbling crash that she accompanied with a brisk shake of the bedpost. The girls gave a rousing cheer.
Dead on hit to the broadside, she declared. Bring the ship about and ready the plank.
Rosamond yanked on a curtain tie, and a white sail unfurled from the top of the bed frame. Meanwhile, Daisy reached for a board that looked to have been ripped from a crate and cobbled together with rope.
Ready for boarding?
She scrambled from one bed to the next and held the cutlass to Millicent's throat.
Hand over the plunder!
Chase had seen enough.
Ahem.
All three of them froze. Four, if you counted Millicent. The room went silent, save for an audible gulp from Miss Mountbatten.
What is going on here? He demanded.
Daisy spoke first.
Millicent's been wounded.
She drew the blade across the doll's neck.
Kerchief, please. She's losing a great deal of blood.
Chase ignored the doll's death throes and stalked across the room to have a word with his governess.
I can explain, she said.
You had better.
The girls and I, well, we're playing a game, you see.
You weren't hired to play games.
But this is an educational game.
An education in cutlasses.
She bit her bottom lip.
Only partly.
Her eyes flitted toward the slate and he followed her gaze. Piracy. He read the word aloud and with horror.
You're instructing them in piracy?
It isn't how you're thinking.
Chase caught her by the elbow and guided her to the far side of the room. He needed space to berate her properly.
You are meant to be teaching them to be proper young ladies. They're not ready to be young ladies, they're girls. They need to play, and they've forgotten how.
They need to learn their lessons. Letters, numbers, stitching samplers with misshapen flowers and dire Bible verses.
They are learning.
She directed his attention to the world map on the wall, where a series of pins guided a string from England to the West Indies. We've plotted a course to Tortuga. There's geography. From there, she walked to the slate and pointed to a stack of figures.
Calculated the length of the journey, how many days it will take, how many rations we'll need aboard. That's arithmetic. I've even taught them a bit of French.
Chase read aloud from the board.
Donnez-nous le butin, ou nous vous ferons jeter par-dessus bord. What does that mean?
She hedged.
Hand over the booty or you'll walk the plank.
Millicent's dead, announced Daisy. It will have to be a burial at sea.
Chase rubbed his temples.
Right. This little game of yours stops at once.
If I'm the governess, I must be allowed my own methods.
I'm your employer. You'll do as I instruct.
Or what? You'll hire another of the candidates queuing up for the post?
She made an exasperated gesture.
I'm succeeding where all the others have failed. How many is it you've been through again?
15. He replied, but I can always find the 16th. London is rife with women who'll happily submit to my wishes.
No doubt it is. I'm not one of them.
They stood locked in a stalemate, dangerously close together. Perhaps it wasn't that he was unwilling to step aside. Maybe he didn't want her to get away. Maybe he wanted her closer. No sooner had the thought crossed his mind than he got his wish. He felt a tight cinch about his ribcage. She made a startled cry. In the space of a moment, they'd grown very close indeed, indecently close, chest to chest close. And if not for a few layers of fabric, the kind of closeness that meant skin on skin.
God.
Baffled, he attempted a self-protective step in retreat. A force resisted.
What the devil?
His hellion wards collapsed on the bed with laughter. He looked down. They'd been tied together with a length of rope, tied and knotted, it would seem. Apparently, while he'd been lost in her fiery eyes, the girls had managed to loop a rope around the two of them and then cinch it tight.
Oh, dear. You little...
Chase wriggled, attempting to turn and chastise them. He succeeded only in craning his neck.
Come back here at once.
Daisy, do you think there's cake in the kitchen? I heard there's jam as well.
The girls linked hands and skipped toward the door.
Don't you dare! Chase hopped in their direction, dragging Miss Mountbatten with him. Get back here or I'll...
Or he'd what? Shut them up in the nursery? Send them to bed without their tea? He tried all those punishments to no avail. His well of threats had run dry.
Rosamond!
He bellowed.
Oh, I answer to Sam now.
Sam? Where did this come from?
It's right there in my name, Rosamond.
You can't answer to Sam, that's absurd.
It's not absurd at all. Ask Miss Mountbatten. Her friends call her Alex. I want to be called Sam.
She beckoned to Daisy.
Come along. The kitchen is just waiting to be plundered. Maybe there's custard?
They disappeared, shutting the door behind them. Chapter 12 Chase strained in the bindings, attempting to wriggle loose. His movements only seemed to make the ropes tighter. To add to the predicament, all that wriggling began creating other problems. Virile man with a functioning cock problems. Be calm, he told himself. This was hardly his first time dealing with an unwanted cockstand. He could coax it down. Cricket. Think about cricket. That's what they say, isn't it? Unfortunately, Chase didn't know much about cricket. His knowledge began and ended with heavy balls and long, rigid bats. Not particularly helpful right now.
How the devil did they manage to do this? He asked.
Knots were among our pirate lessons.
He rolled his eyes. Of course they were.
They're an essential part of seamanship, she said,
as if this should be an acceptable excuse.
I'll have us out of this in a trice. They've only learned the simplest type so far, and they made the mistake of leaving me one hand to untie it.
She moved her free hand along the rope, lashing them together.
Now, where is the knot?
At the small of my back, unfortunately.
She had her arm around him as far as she could reach, as if they were locked in an embrace.
Just a little further. Aha!
Her fingers traced the contours of the knot where it lay against the small of his back.
A simple reef knot. I'll have it loose in moments if I can just find the proper angle.
She moved up and down, sliding along his body to angle for a better grip. If he had any hope of subduing his swelling erection, it quickly evaporated. No cricket could save him now, unless he took a bat to the head. Alex felt it. The thick, hard ridge pulsing and growing against her belly. Her fingers froze in place. She'd already been overwhelmed by the scent and heat of him and the solid wall of his chest, but this, the crude, unmistakable proof that he was feeling it too, it set her brain spinning. Thank heaven he was so tall. At least she was staring crimson-cheeked into his waistcoat rather than his face.
Ignore it, she told herself. Think of celestial navigation.
But his swelling groin proved difficult to ignore. Its size was an inconvenient wedge between them, making it even harder for Alexandra to work the knot loose. She would have a devil of a time freeing it with one hand. Perhaps we should talk.
Yes, she jumped to answer. Let's talk.
So your friends call you Alex?
It's simpler. Alexandra is quite the mouthful. And your friends call you Chase, I gather.
It's Charles, properly, but ever since school I've answered to Chase.
Ah, so your schoolmates gave you the nickname?
No, I chose it.
You chose your own nickname?
She laughed to herself.
That is a bit pathetic, I'm sorry to say.
The name didn't fit my lifestyle. Charles is dull. Chase sounds roguish, exciting. No woman wants to cry out, "Oh, Charles, yes, Charles." In bed, I mean, would you? Forget I said that.
Alexandra would try, but she doubted she would succeed.
Tell me about your schooling, he said.
My schooling?
Boring lessons, grim schoolrooms. If by chance you had any dour, dried-up, snaggle-toothed headmistresses, I'd love to hear about them right now, in detail.
My least favourite teacher wasn't dried-up or ugly at all. She was quite pretty, as a matter of fact, but she would spank us for misbehaving.
Really, he said, groaning weakly.
A smart thwack of the ruler straight on the backside.
On second thought, let's not talk.
She managed to snag a fibre of rope with her fingernail.
I think I'm making progress.
Thank God, he breathed.
I'm not certain I can loosen it without a bit more slack. Is there any way you can press just a bit closer? A few moments, no more. All I need is a half inch.
He made a strangled noise.
If you must, but do it quickly. Otherwise, we're going to move a good 7 inches in the wrong direction.
What?
Never mind.
Alexandra leaned in, turning her head so that her cheek rested on his chest. His chin settled atop her head, heavy and square. The hollow thump of his heartbeat drummed in her ears and echoed in her belly. For a moment she forgot all about the knot, and the nursery, and the children, and anything else in the world that wasn't his hard, lean male body. She was wrapped about him like a sailor lashed to the mast in a storm. And then his hand gripped her hip and pulled her closer still, as if they were lovers in an embrace. He exhaled a shaky breath. The sigh gave her just enough space to work with. She wiggled her trembling fingers into the loop of rope, then pulled. There. The knot was undone, and so was she. They weren't prepared. Pressed together so closely, they had all the stability of a lawn bowls pin. The sudden release sent them toppling, and his grip on her backside meant she tumbled with him, and landed atop him as they hit the floor with a thud. He cushioned the fall, taking the brunt of it.
Oof!
Alexandra levered herself on her elbows.
Are you injured?
No.
But you thanked your head. She felt his skull. Say something.
Ouch.
She laughed, both relieved and nervous.
Now I know what that dratted doll feels like.
Are you hurting terribly?
Tomorrow I will be. At the moment I'm fine.
You're certain? Perhaps I should...
Alexandra.
He cupped her chin and forced her to meet his eyes.
Enough.
Goodness. The sound of her name from his lips in that forceful, husky voice. He still clutched a handful of her backside.
I know you don't approve of the piracy game, but it's the one I've found to reach them. Daisy's struggling with her lessons. She can scarcely read. Rosamond is so protective of her. Her instinct is to push me away rather than risk being hurt. They need patience. She paused. More than that, they need to feel safe and loved.
I've told you I cannot give them that.
You could if you tried.
I thought you understood this from the very first day. I'm a bitter disappointment, remember, a poor excuse for a gentleman, a man incapable of understanding the consequence of stockings.
But you're also a man who holds a little girl's hand and eulogizes her doll every morning. A duke's heir who builds cozy window seats and bookshelves by hand for his orphaned wards.
How do you know that?
I guessed. Downstairs you were hanging your own panelling. Thank you for my veranda, by the way. You're good with your hands.
You don't know the half of it, he growled.
He gathered a handful of her bottom and squeezed. An electric thrill forked through her. After zinging wildly all over her body, the sensation settled in her nipples, drawing them to tingling points.
See, don't waste your time attempting to reform me. It's a lost cause, he muttered almost too low for her to hear. I'm a lost cause.
A lost cause? That wasn't the sort of conclusion one came to on one's own. Someone had taught him a lie, etching it not only on his mind, but in his soul. Whoever it was, Alexandra despised them, on behalf of Rosamond and Daisy, and on behalf of Chase Renaud himself. She couldn't allow such a falsehood to pass unchallenged.
Chase.
She softened her touch, smoothing back his hair.
No one's a lost cause.
His eyes held a clash of emotions, doubt, mixed with a desperate yearning to believe. Denial, warring against desire. Push, tethered to pull.
Don't imagine things, she told herself.
In all likelihood, his eyes merely reflected the confused emotions in her own. His grip on her bottom went firm as a decision. Her breath caught. In a flash, he'd rolled her onto her back, pinning her beneath him.
Listen to me, he said. If I were any sort of decent man, one who could be trusted to care about anyone other than himself, I wouldn't have a governess flat on her back beneath me on the nursery floor. If you refuse to believe that, I'll have to teach you a lesson.
She gave him a teasing smile.
What if I teach you one first?
She kissed him square on the forehead. He kissed her back square on the lips, and the passion of it took her breath away. Chapter 13. Chase kissed her forcefully, to prove what he was. There was no tenderness in it, only punishment. A good lashing with his tongue rather than a switch. If everyone else was playing pirate, he was going to play pirate too. Pirates took, they seized, they plundered. He kissed his way down her neck, her delicate, lovely neck, while he skimmed his hand to the full length of her torso, tracing the contours of her body through the thin muslin of her frock. The embrace he meant to be punishing became much too tender. "Alexandra," he whispered. Her friends called her Alex, but he wasn't her friend, he was her employer, her superior in society, and a practiced rake. One who could ravish her right here, right now, on the creaking schoolroom floor, amid the scattered books and slates and chalk. Instead, all he wanted was to kiss her for hours, days. Every woman was unique, but she was just so different. Strange and brave and clever. She made him different, too. For once he wanted to slow down, take time to explore and notice everything about her, rather than hide from himself. Her tongue shyly caressed his. Each light, teasing pass was a gift. Her first tastes of passion, and she shared them with him, freely, sweetly. In her arms, he could almost dream he deserved it. No one's a lost cause. He'd never wanted to believe anything more. But she didn't know, couldn't begin to understand, how far he'd strayed from the path of respectability. Chase was so lost, he'd fallen straight off the map. He broke the kiss and rose up on one elbow, needing to see her. She stared up at him with dark, glassy eyes. Her lips were plump and reddened from his kisses. "By God, you're lovely." Her skin warmed with a bashful glow. If she'd been lovely a moment ago, she was radiant now. And he was in very deep trouble. The moment was precipitously ruined by the sound of two girls crashing up the stairs. He and Alexandra were barely able to scramble to their feet and straighten their clothing before Rosamund and Daisy barreled into the room. Each girl had a slice of cake in one hand and a jam-stuffed roll in the other.
"Boo!"
Daisy used her sleeve to wipe jam from her mouth.
"You escaped." "We'll practice our knots and do better next time," Rosamund told her sister.
"There will be no next time," Chase said sternly. "No more piracy." He waved expansively at the piratical decor. "In fact, tomorrow I'm going to take all..."
"He's going to take all of us on an outing,"
Alexandra interjected.
"An outing?"
Rosamund sounded incredulous. Chase was incredulous too.
"I thought we weren't allowed outings," Rosamund said.
"You're absolutely correct," Chase replied. "And that is why I'm..."
"He's making an exception tomorrow," she interrupted.
"Oh, now really." This was an act of shameless betrayal. Daisy cheered as she bounced on the bed.
"Where are we going?"
Chase stood tall.
"I am not..."
Mr. Reynolds not telling. His treasonous governess spoke over him once more. "He said it's meant to be a surprise. Isn't it wonderful?" Chase glared at her. She smiled back. He left the room on an exasperated curse. Very well. If they wanted an outing, he would give them one. And it would be highly educational.
"The Tower of London," Alexandra mused aloud. "A bold choice. So much rich history. We can view the crown jewels."
"Jewels are not on the schedule. I have a specific history lesson in mind."
They proceeded directly to Beauchamp Tower, where Chase, she couldn't think of him as Mr. Reynard any longer, marched them up a spiralling stone staircase. They emerged onto a floor shaped rather like a flower, a round space in the middle, with small alcoves sprouting from the centre, like petals. Daisy popped in and out of each alcove, skipping in circles.
"What is this place?" "It's a prison," Rosamund answered. "The middle here was for the jailers, and all those little bits you're dancing around were cells."
"How do you know?"
Daisy replied.
"Because this is the Tower of London, ninny. If you don't believe me, ask the prisoners who left their marks."
Rosamund pointed at letters carved into the wall.
"See here?"
She traced another mark, a bit higher.
"And here?" "Everywhere," Daisy said, turning in place.
Hand-etched graffiti crammed every bit of stone that a man could conceivably reach. Sometimes merely initials or a date. In other places, elaborate crosses have been chiselled in bas-relief. Bible verses stretched for yards across the walls.
Why would they do that?
Daisy asked.
It's terribly naughty. They were criminals, Rosamond said. They didn't care about right behaviour.
People want to leave a mark on the world, Alex said. It's human nature. Some are remembered by their accomplishments or their virtues. Others live on through their children.
She trailed her fingers over Daisy's back as she strolled by. And if he has none of those to leave behind, a man carves his name into the wall. We all want to be remembered.
Oh, they were remembered as criminals.
Chase stood in the center of the room.
Do you know who ended up in a prison like this one, girls? Murderers. Traitors.
And pirates,
Rosamond finished dryly, having caught on to her guardian's lesson.
Yes, and pirates. A few hundred years ago, you'd have been brought in through the river entrance, dragged up to one of these cells, and left to rot for a year or five. Only straw for your bed. Crusts and weak soup, no meat. You'd have been crammed in with other unwashed prisoners covered in filth, lice, rats, disease.
Disease!
Daisy cheered.
Which ones?
Very, very boring ones, he said, and don't cheer, it was misery. Now, if all that wasn't bad enough, once you were convicted in court,
he drew his finger across his neck in a throat-slicing gesture.
Beheading,
Daisy said, awed.
Right out there in the yard. That's if you were of noble birth. The rest were hung by their necks, and their heads went on pikes by the river as a warning, all the blood dripping down, eyes pecked out by ravens.
Hands behind her back, Alex ambled over to stand by her employer.
Surely there are less gruesome ways of teaching history, Mr. Reynaud?
Surely there are less irritating methods of teaching geography than piracy.
She had no answer to that.
Be grateful I didn't choose an outing to the fleet.
He crossed his arms over his chest and addressed the girls.
Now, I expect that this little visit will have cured you both of your criminal behaviour. There will be no further stealing, piracy, or dollicide. Not unless you want a scene like this one in your future.
In our future?
Rosamond looked around the ancient cell, considering.
Locked in an upstairs room, given only crusts to eat, and plagued by disease. Seems rather like the life we have now. We may as well have a few high seas adventures while we can.
She beckoned to Daisy.
Let's go see the menagerie.
Chase tipped his head back and gave an exaggerated groan of despair.
Wait.
Alex rummaged in her reticule.
We'll need a shilling each for entrance.
Rosamond rattled two coins in her hand.
Our guardian gave us the coins already.
She cast a cheeky smile at his pocket.
In a manner of speaking.
Daisy skipped to follow her sister, sing-song chanting all the way down the stairs. Alex moved to follow them. She only made it 2.5 paces before his deep voice arrested her progress.
Not yet, Miss Mountbatten.
I should follow the girls. It isn't safe to leave them without supervision.
They're fine, he said. Rosamond won't let Daisy out of her sight.
Oh, I know the girls will be safe.
She gave him a deceptively carefree smile.
It's the lions and tigers I'm worried about.
You're not going anywhere.
He pulled her into one of the room's stone alcoves. I need a word. He needed a word. Which word, she longed to know. Could it possibly be lovely? Because that was the only word she'd been able to think since the previous night.
By God, you're lovely, he'd said.
He called you lovely, her brain had sung, and it hadn't stopped singing ever since. Lovely, 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 L-O-V-E-L.
Why?
Because he finds you lovely.
Also, lovely.
I could have told you this outing wouldn't work the way you hoped.
Since I hired you, Miss Mountbatten, nothing has gone the way I hoped.
Try to see the positives. Rosamond and Daisy are bold, clever, resourceful girls. Even if the mischief could be beaten out of them, and I suspect there's a solid chance the rod would splinter first, their spirits would be broken too. What a tragedy that would be.
Oh yes, a tragedy indeed.
His ironic tone didn't fool her. Alex was coming to see the fondness he harboured for his wards. If he didn't care about them, he wouldn't bother to try.
They're children. They have a natural curiosity about the world and a desire to learn. They merely need the encouragement and opportunity, the freedom to pursue their own interests.
Aren't you concerned with the improvement of their minds?
I'm chiefly concerned with the improvement of their behaviour.
They must learn to move in society.
My duty as guardian is to provide Rosamond and Daisy with a secure, comfortable future. A young woman's best hope at such is to marry and marry well.
She lifted an eyebrow. The same way your parents married well?
Oh, I'll make certain they do better than my father. They could scarcely do worse. But in general, yes, that is how the English aristocracy works.
Perhaps the English aristocracy needs to do better.
He made a derisive sound. I'm flattered you think I have the power to change the world.
I don't think you have the power to change the world, she replied. I think Rosamond and Daisy do, if given the chance.
Is that so? He drew closer. And how are you planning to change the world, Miss Mountbatten?
I couldn't tell you, Mr. Reynaud. At the moment, I'm too busy changing the sky.
After staring into her eyes for an eon or two, he sighed dramatically. You are the worst example of false advertising. I was led to believe I was hiring a prim scold. Then I learn you're remarkable and bold and interesting. Well, Alex thought, that stupid song in her brain had four words now. She stammered,
I wish you didn't say things like that.
I wish you didn't make me think things like that. So we're square.
We should go after the girls.
Yes, we should.
Neither of them moved. Alex bit her lip. We're going to kiss instead, aren't we?
He caught her in his arms. You're goddamn right we are.
Chapter 14. Chase kissed her with the desperate fervour of a man going to the gallows, grappling and moaning, pressing her into the wall at her back. He palmed her breast, the warm, gentle swell he'd felt melting against him last night. She'd made him so damned hard then, and his cock seemed determined to outdo itself today. Her leg wrapped over his. He kissed his way down her neck, her impossibly delicate, lovely neck, until the collar of her jacket halted his progress. He felt a twinge of conscience. Most people would think he didn't have a conscience, but he did. It surfaced about as often as the lost island of Atlantis, but he did possess one, down deep. And it was bellowing at him now. Then she arched her back, pressing her breast into his hand, and made a soft, pleading moan.
Conscience? What conscience? Lock the prison bars and throw away the key. God, this place did something to him.
The infamy of centuries swirled in the air. Imprisoned ghosts rattled their chains. He felt the echoes of suffering ages past, the weight of guilt, crushing regret, hunger and yearning and loneliness. All the same miserable emotions that held him captive late at night. Chase had spent years locked away inside himself, and all too often holding a woman in his arms felt like his only escape. But this was different. Alexandra was different. This wasn't a moment he'd be wishing to erase from his memory later. On the contrary, he yearned to etch the shape of their entwined bodies into the stone, amid all the names and dates and Bible verses, and leave a mark that time couldn't erase. What was it she'd said? We all want to be remembered. Well, Chase wouldn't be inventing a steam-powered phaeton. No monument would be raised to his heroics, and he'd vowed not to father any children of his own. But even if all that survived of him was this embrace, that would be a legacy he could reflect on with pride.
On this site in 1817, Mr. Chase Reynaud gave Miss Alexandra Mountbatten the most passionate, erotic, bone-melting kiss in recorded history.
As he kissed her deeply, he lifted her, parting her slippers from the floor and pinning her hips to the wall with his own. She stared at him, her lungs working for breath, eyes glassy. He reached between their bodies, finding the buttons of her jacket. He began to undo them, slipping them free one by one. The task was easily done, and he knew the reason why. She had only the one jacket, and she'd worn it so many times that the buttonholes had gone slack. This tangible evidence of her poverty was convenient, he supposed. Many men of his station would view it as permission to make free with her favours. However, it didn't strike Chase that way. As he slipped the final button loose, he felt resentful and protective. She deserved better. A young, unmarried woman of her class lived with the spectre of danger and a threadbare jacket made for a pitiful shield. He wanted to peel the garment from her, cast it aside, and offer himself instead. Chase wasn't good for much, but he could stand between her body and the world. He cupped her breast through the light muslin of her day dress. He found her nipple and rolled it beneath his thumb, teasing it to a hard peak.
Chase!
The pleading note in her voice made him wild. He stole inside her open jacket, shoving aside the virginal white fichu, then worked his fingers beneath the muslin of her frock. He knew the layers of a woman's clothing as well as he knew his own, better than his own, truthfully, since he had a valet to assist with his own attire. He eased one of her frock sleeves down over her shoulder. The strategy gave him just enough space to reach beneath her stiffened stays and linen shift. With a deft, well-practiced motion, he lifted her breast, liberating it from her stays. Her eyes fluttered closed. She bit her lip, sealing in a gasp. He would have liked to hear her moan and cry out with pleasure, but there was something about the silence that was just as erotic, if not more. Breathless, he cradled the soft weight in his hand, caressing, treasuring. She was so small and slightly built, her heartbeat thrummed like a bird's beneath his palm. Holding her breast was like holding her heart in his hand, and that scared the life out of him. Guarding her body was just basic masculine impulse, but he couldn't take responsibility for her heart. He broke the embrace with uncharacteristic brusqueness, setting her back on her feet. A bewildered look moved over her face as he rearranged her clothing. He regretted causing her any confusion or disappointment, but this time he'd gone much too far. More accurately, he'd drawn too close. He cleared his throat. Alexandra, this...
Never happened, she finished. I know.
Her lips curved in a smile, but her eyes weren't in on the joke. She was hurt. He felt small enough to disappear into a crack in the wall. Well, she couldn't be surprised. She had no illusions about the sort of man he was, not when it came to women anyway. She'd had ample evidence of his rakish history from the start. Apparently it was Chase who needed the reminder. Very well, then. He would go out on the town, find a sophisticated, beautiful, willing woman, bring her back to his retreat, put that new mattress to the test, and rid himself of the desire to paw at the governess like a slavering hound. And he would do it tonight. Chapter 15.
Come have a look at Mars.
It was a clear, dark night, and Alexandra had invited the girls to join her for a bit of stargazing, well past their bedtime. A lesson in celestial navigation, she called it. In truth, it was a bribe to get them into their baths and nightclothes, then brush and neatly plait their hair. The girls' hair smelled clean and fresh, and as she bent over Daisy's shoulder to help her find the red planet, she drank in the innocent scent. A tender, warm emotion spread through her chest. In just a few weeks' time, she'd grown to care for these girls, deeply. By helping them, it was as though she could reach back through time to her younger, newly orphaned self, and clasp that girl in a hug laced with assurance. Don't be afraid. I know it's hard now, so very hard, but you're stronger than you know, and it will all come right in the end. But as she wrapped her arm round Daisy's shoulders and pressed her nose to the girl's sweet-smelling crown, Alex was a little bit afraid herself. When the girls went away to school, would anyone be there to hug and soothe them then?
I can't make it out, Daisy said. It's all muzzy.
Truly, let me see. Alex replaced her young charge at the eyepiece. Perhaps I need to clean the lens. Before she could take a proper view, however, they heard the sounds of a carriage drawing up alongside the house. A quick peek out the window confirmed Alexandra's suspicions. Mr. Raynaud had rolled up to the house in his phaeton, and he wasn't alone. Light, feminine laughter floated up through the night air and swooped through the open window uninvited. Alex wanted to swat that laughter like a pesky gnat.
"Oh, Reynaud," the lady said coyly, "you are a devil."
"Blit."
He handed the lady down from the high-sprung carriage. As she alighted, the woman stumbled. Mr. Reynaud caught her in his arms.